Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps you build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lauren and Mean interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then the show's for you. This episode is brought to you by Kensington News title, A Letter to Three Witches by Elizabeth Bass. In a sleepy college town in Zenobia, New York, the only supernatural trace on display is the name of Gwen Engel's business, Abracadabra Odd Job Service. But Gwen's family has some unusual abilities they've been keeping under wraps, until one little letter spells big trouble. Nearly a century ago, Gwen Engel's great-great-grandfather cast a spell with catastrophic side effects. As a result, the Grand Council of Witches forbade his descendants from practicing witchcraft. The council even planted anonymous niches called Watchers in the community to report any stern spell casting. Yet magic may still be alive and not so well in Zenobia. Gwen and her cousins Trudy and Milo receive a letter from Gwen's adopted sister, Tanith, informing them that she bewitched one of her partners and will run away with him at the end of the week. While Gwen frets about whether to trust her scientist boyfriend currently out of town on his beetle studying trip, she's worried that a local grad student, Jeremy, secretly a watcher doing his own research. Cousin Trudy is so stressed that she accidentally enchants her cupcakes, creating havoc among her baker customers and in her marriage. Perhaps it's time for a family to take back control and figure out how to harness their powers. How else can Gwen decide whether her growing feelings for Jeremy are real or a result of too many Trudy cupcakes? So the best way to describe this book is Bewitched meets Practical Magic. It's a rom-com featuring Sisterhood of Witches. You can find A Letter to Three Witches by Elizabeth Bath wherever books are sold. Find out more information at kensingtonbooks.com.
Hi, Caridad. Welcome to our next podcast.
Hi there, Laura. So nice to be here with you tonight.
So nice to chat with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born in Cuba, and we came here during the 60s, as many Cubans did, but I grew up on Long Island, and right now my husband and I just downsized, and we're living on the Jersey Shore, and I love being near the water. Mm-hmm. I've been writing, I started in the fifth grade, believe it or not, had a teacher who gave us a class project, and I went home and started writing, and my poor mom had to type like 120 pages, and it was a romance, even in the fifth grade. And I kind of kept it up all through, high school, college. I went to law school. I'm retired now and writing full time, which I absolutely love. And I guess my first book came out in 1999. It was for Encanto, which was the nation's first Latino romance line. And I just kept on writing ever since then. I moved on from them to Harlequin, who was always a wonderful experience. I'm actually back with Harlequin writing for their intrigue line. And I've just had a blast writing just all kinds of different books, both with diverse characters and not. It's really, as a writer, it's whatever hits me to write is what I love to be able to do.
I love this. So I learned about Encanto this week. I was talking to my friend Brie, who has a Category Romance. You probably have met her, Category Romance podcast. I think
I love Brie. I've talked to her before.
Yeah. So Brie was telling me, she's like, yeah, there was like this line, it's called Encanto, like the movie. And I was like, okay, let me search how much there are. Like maybe there are some extra books like at eBay or Etsy. The books right now are like hundreds of dollars just to find one of them. So they're hard.
No.
Yes. They're hard to find. I was like, really?
Well, I'll tell you what. Send me your address and I'll dig some up for you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. It's like funny enough. I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is like crazy. I got a question. What part of Cuba are you from?
I was born in Havana.
Okay.
My sister and I, my parents, my grandparents were actually from a province in Spain. So my parents were first generation Cubans, which was kind of interesting because Cubans really didn't consider them Cuban enough. But really, that's the identity that I have, even though, we have roots in Spain that go back for far longer than our time in Cuba.
Yeah, so because I was like, I grew up in Puerto Rico, and so a lot of the Cuban exile community moved to the area where I grew up with, and so we have Casa Cuba, we had all the stuff, and so I grew up with like really connected to the Cuban diaspora in Puerto Rico. And my stepdad happens to, he left Cuba, he was a child, he was 9 years old. He came from Camagüey, and then and he let his brother stay behind, and ended up coming years later, but there is like all this like connection of like the Cuban, like growing up with that, like understanding like the world Castro and like the people leaving behind their families and leaving behind the things and starting over, and so, and I know you touch upon in this book, so let's chat about that.
I do. This book actually has a lot of my family's like experience woven into this fictional story. There obviously some elements aren't mine, like if you read the book, the a husband of the grandmother is a military man and he goes off and goes to the Bay of Pigs and then he comes back and he goes somewhere else. I mean, that's not a true part of the story. But I thought it was important to show that because it's such an important part of not only Cuban history, but American history. What happened at the Bay of Pigs really presented a lot of problems for the US because it was followed by the Cuban Missile Crisis. So I thought it was important to put that in because I think people would be aware of it. But a lot of the other things, especially the character of Lara, were things that I experienced as a child. And some of the things about the grandmother Carmen, who's named after my mom, were real life things that my mom had done in Cuba. And so I had been trying to write about that for a very long time, and I couldn't because it was too emotional. I lost my mom when I was relatively young, and she never really shared a lot. I found out a lot of the stuff after she had passed. And every time I went to write it, I couldn't. But then all of a sudden, it was like I wanted to write a story with a heroine who had no connection to that part of her history. And it just came to me, wow, this is a chance to actually not only tell this heroine story as she reconnects with this family who she knows nothing about, but it was a way to actually tell those stories that I'd never been able to get on paper before. And I was able to, and I really love the way that it worked. And it's an homage to my mother, who was really quite an amazing woman, but also to the struggle of all immigrants, because, for example, Jessica, who's the heroine, really connects to her dad's Italian family, and you see a lot of them, and they're loosely based on my husband's family. But I think it's the book is an ode to all immigrants who've come here and who've gone and moved into the next phase of their lives and have been able to accomplish the American dream as so many people have been able to do.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see like, being a first generation immigrant and coming to the States and like adapting, and working and trying to figure out how to come to the American dream and still like having a culture that you're part of it, that you cannot, you're not leaving behind, but you left behind
You're
alive, back there.
No,
So.
you're right. It's a delicate balance to whether people call it acclimating, whatever you want to call it, but to become part of the mainstream while still maintaining your culture. And I think many people are able to do that balancing act. And we did it in my family for a very long time until I married an American, and then it became harder. Because I was, more entrenched in, and I call him American, but really his mom is first generation Italian, I believe. But little by little, you do find ways to keep those aspects of your culture that are most important to you, and to keep that history alive in some way. And for me, getting some of those stories in a book and passing it on to my daughter, actually made her a special book where I, picked out all the true stories and actually gave her the backstory for some of them, so that I hope when she reads that, she understands what kind of struggle it was for us to come here and be here, and how, we managed to be successful, despite that struggle.
I cannot can identify so much because I'm like some ways I grew up in the island, so I came to the States when I was 18 and I acclimated and adapted to the mainstream. And like some parts, like I'm now 20 years later trying to go back to, I moved to Florida recently. And one of the reasons why I was like to go back to my culture, like to go back to connecting to speaking Spanish, to connecting to seeing my family more often and have all this ability. But it's like you have to make an effort, like to maintain both, like how to maintain both identities and merge them into who you are as a person,
No, it's true. You do have to work at it. I think in some ways, what's harder about La Cubina, Cubanidad is that you can't go back to Cuba for the most part. And it's not just the embargo, it's how hard the Castro government makes it for us to go back. And so, like for me, when I wanted to show my daughter aspects of my culture, I would take her to Miami because that's the closest thing I have to Cuba. And obviously, we eat the foods and the music and everything else. And hopefully one day I will be able to take her back. And myself, see these things that I haven't seen or probably don't even remember since, I was a child when I left.
I think that's like that's the saddest part about like not being able to be in exile is not to be able to go back to the island and just be able to witness the different things and witness the food, the food, the people, the connection, the streets, like the houses, like seeing the beaches, And yeah, we have Miami, which is like there's a large Cuban community, and so, but it's not the same. It's not the same as going to Atlanta, going to Malecón, it's not the same.
No, it's not. In reality, when I think about it, sometimes it's almost like, Havana is still stuck in the 50s in some ways. And Miami maybe is what Havana would have been. You know what I'm saying? In terms of, the growth and the development and things like that. But still, my dad left me all the addresses of like where he was born and my mom and where they lived and where my sister and I were born and things like that. So, my hope is that one day I'll be able to go back with my daughter and actually go to these places and say, okay, this is where your abuelo was from. This is where, my sister and I were born and things like that. So hopefully, and I think you get a sense of that exile, and I mention it in the book because it is for many Cubans an exile because they didn't plan on staying here. And that was very obvious, even with me as a child. I could tell that, my parents and my grandparents, they wanted to go back. They wanted to get rid of Castro. They wanted to go back. And it just never happened. And I think a lot of people, especially older people, carry that still, that sense of exile and loss. And it does come across in the book because I thought it was important to bring that out.
Love chatting with you about this because it's like it reminds me of things from my childhood. It reminds me of things of like what I grew up with and the same time just witnessing. So understanding that, we're all in this together.
Yeah, no, we are.
What are you working next?
Right now, I've got a couple of projects. I actually signed contracts to do a number of books with Harlequin Intrigue, and I have one coming out and a free read coming out starting in the middle of March, and those are stories that we created with the editors for the line. But I have also a series, and they're romantic suspense stories because I've done that for a long time. I do contemporaries, I do romantic suspense, paranormals. I mean, I write in multiple genres and have always done that. But the ones that are coming out hopefully later in the year are actually run, you know, it's about a private investigation and security agency that's run by Cubans. And so I'm hoping that the Harlequin Intrigue readers will like seeing stories with different characters that are set in Miami. The patriarch of that family went to the Bay of Pigs and came back. Then the family has all kinds of different jobs, but they all work together in this agency to solve a variety of cases that pop up. And then I'm also working on some more women's fictiony kinds of books. It's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, and yet not, because you know, when people ask me, well, what is the family that she never met? And it's like, well, you know, it does have a lot of women's fiction elements, but it's also a really, you know, strong romance as well. Not to mention, you know, the family drama, which I think falls more in the women's fiction category. But I just want, you know, I want to try something different. And so I'm working on two different projects there that we're trying to decide, you know, where they would fit in. And you know, I've been talking to my editor who worked on me and did an amazing job on The Family She Never Met, about how to structure those stories. So I'm always working on multiple things at a shot. It's the way that I've been working now for a number of years.
I love this, and I can't wait for you for the retreat. I love that you have me a Cuban private, investigator, like Bay of Pig, kind of like patriarchy. Yes, you have me at that. So, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, brothers and sisters and a whole family
Yeah.
working together. And I actually, you got a hint about it. I did a book, oh my gosh, I think it's last March now, called Cold Case Reopen, where you meet the Miami cousins in that book. And my goal is to do those cousins' stories as number 4 and 5 in this series. And my editor seemed receptive to that. So, you know, I'm hoping people will enjoy something different.
Yes, take us to some more weather. Although I live in warm weather now, but it's still take us to some more weather.
Yeah, we could use it. I'm in the Northeast. We could definitely use some warm weather.
absolutely. I live in New York, and then moved to Chicago before the pandemic, and now I live in Tampa. And so it's adjustment, the first winter where there's no snow and it's just like 80 degree weather. I'm like, what is just happening? I'm like, after 20 years living in like snowy weather, and I'm like, this is kind of like strange, but it's super
But
warm.
nice.
It's nice. I cannot complain. It's Florida, but I cannot complain.
Yeah, it's I was funny. I wish I'd known. I was down in the Tampa area because I did a Hallmark book that they made into a movie, South Beach Love, and that was a lot of fun. And we went down to Tampa, St. Petersburg to watch them filming the movie.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, and I was really excited. The lead was William Levy, who's like
Oh,
so hot.
yes, I know who William Levy is.
So hot. I mean, he was really cute.
Yes.
And it was fun to watch that. And again, you know, that was something different for Hallmark. It was different characters. It was something maybe they weren't used to, but you know, the movie had a very good reception. And so, you know, that was a positive thing. And I think that's what I've always wanted to do. You know, when you hear people talk about like I'm sure you've seen watch Schitt's Creek. Yeah, and you know, when you have the storyline with David, who's, you know, who's gay and he's in love and everything, but they never beat you over the head with it. And because of that, people were so open and so receptive and so in love with that character. And I think that's what I've always tried to do in writing stories with diverse characters, is to show people that they're different, but they're just like you, and not beat people over the head with it, because I don't think that's how you get fans. And you know, it's, you know, I've had a lot of positive response that way, and we can hope that that continues.
Oh, I love this. You have me at diverse characters, and congratulations on a Hallmark movie. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And many more to come, you know.
Yeah, you hopefully.
You never know. So let's chat some book recommendations. Do you have any books you recommend our listeners to pick up?
Oh, wow. Well, I read like a whole bunch of eclectic things. I love really like funny, sweet contemporaries. Like I would recommend Shannon Stacy and Samantha Chase. And I also like stories that are a little bit more complex, again, almost leading into that women's fiction, but not, you know, stories that have a very strong romance line. And so some of my favorites are like Rayanne Thayne and Nancy Nagel. Rayanne in particular, she hooked me years ago. It was a regular Harlequin. It was one of their imprints, and it might have been American Romance, I'm not sure. But it was called Dancing in the Moonlight. Mm. And what really got me was the heroine was a military veteran who had lost a leg. Mm. And I'm like, whoa. And it was such an emotional, such an amazing story. Mm-hmm. When we went to one of the conferences, I told Rayanne, I said, oh my gosh, like, you just blew me out of the water with this story. And ever since then, like, if she's got a book out, I'm there, I'm grabbing it to read, because she really just hurt the emotion in her stories, and the romance is just always amazing. And then when I'm looking for something edgier, I'm a big J.D. Robb fan. I've been in love with Eve and Rourke from day one. You know, I even reread the whole series a couple of years back, from one all the way through whatever the latest one was. And actually, I have one of them. I just bought it like a day ago. The latest one is sitting up on my to-be-read pile. But, you know, I love that kind of police procedural, which I think, you know, is why I'm still writing romantic suspense, because I really, really like it. And if people do like that kind of thing, like, you know, I would definitely, like, for my Harlequin intrigue buddies, Dolores Fawcett is always a great read. L. James. There are just so many great reads. You know, that are quick reads too. One of the things I like about things like the intrigues and the like is the shortness of them. But then I really like getting into the meat of a story, you know, like The Family She Never Met and a lot of the other books, that Source Books, who's my publisher for that, put out. I mean, they just have such amazing stories with their authors. And I would highly recommend people to check out, you know, it's they come out under the Casablanca imprint, it's called, and you can find them, I think, on Instagram. Their title is Bookmarked, which I think is a great name, and get a load of what they have there, because they just put together a fabulous romance package for people with so many great authors.
We do have great books, I have to say. Like they're one of my favorite imprints, so. Thanks for the plug for that. And Rayanne, yes, I agree totally. And I love the intrigue line, just because it's a fun, short, it's edge of your seat stories that just keeps you going. And they're shorter, so they're easy to consume. So thank you. Thank you for giving me some authors to check out. So
yeah. No, they have some really great authors at Source Books. And you know, I'm honored to be able to work with them, because they have some of the, you know, the bells of the industry in that Casablanca line. And you know, if you like women's fiction, they also have a line that specializes in that as well. And I just love it. It's just a great, you know, they've got a lot of great authors there. And you know, if you like diverse novels, Zeo Axelrod has gotten a lot of buzz for her latest books. And you know, it's just a great, you know, it's nice to see people embracing diversity. But again, Without necessarily beating people over the head about it. It's just wonderful to be able to get people to try all kinds of different things. And Landmark is the name of their women's fiction line for those people who like something that's a little bit different and not necessarily a romance. But on their under the Casablanca imprint, they just have a bunch of absolutely favorite authors, a lot of series. And like I said, some of the really big names in romance, like Sharon Sala, and just I would definitely tell people to check them out because they're definitely going to find something that they love with that publishing house.
Yeah. So, all right. So tell us where we can find you online.
You can find me online. I'm actually at Caridad, CARIDAD.com is my website.
Awesome.
So you
So,
just have to remember my first name.
yeah, that's a great
And,
website.
yeah, thanks. And I'm on Facebook as Caridad.author, and you could also find me on Instagram, with my full name, Caridad Pinero, and at TikTok and Pinterest and a whole bunch of different places. But you can go to my website at Caridad.com and link out to all those other ones.
I love this. Thank you, Candida, for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me about the family she never met. And I hope people will check it out because I think it's a romance, but it's got a lot of depth with the family story that's there, and I think people will enjoy it.
I love this. Thank you. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. Today's episode's partner is Libre FM. If you're an audiobook listener, then you should add Libre FM as your go-to source for paid audiobooks. Libre FM makes it possible for you to buy audiobooks through your local bookstore. Memberships start at $14.95, and they also have great sales for romance audiobooks each month for $3.99, thanks to the Kiss Club. To sign up for LibreFM, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/LibreFM. You will receive a free audiobook when you sign up for a monthly subscription. If you purchase a subscription through our link, you will be supporting the podcast at no cost to you. The What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Please visit frolic.media/podcast to discover new shows to tune in. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.